The Public News Service DOA Newscast, August 11, 2023. I'm Mike Clifford. There are many good reasons for states to update their voter rolls in preparation for elections, but a new report contends many are too zealous about it, jeopardizing some people's rights to vote.
When people die or move out of state, their names may be removed from the voter rolls in that state. However, a new report from the think tank Demos found that more than 19 million voters were purged from the rolls between the 2020 and 2022 general elections, and says more than one quarter were dropped for flawed reasons like inactivity. Angela Hanks with Demos says they evaluated 10 states' voter removal laws and safeguards. Michigan scored 52% for its removal policies.
Impact is often disproportionately on voters of color, on naturalized citizens, and on other marginalized or underrepresented communities. So that is really why we are looking into this, is because when states pursue these flawed practices, it means that people who are eligible to vote can't vote, and that is a problem for our democracy.
80 of Michigan's 83 counties voted to pass Proposition 3 in 2018 by the advocacy group Promote the Vote. It allows for same-day voter registration along with other voting access in the state, indicating widespread support for increasing access to the ballot. Farah Siddiqui reporting.
Michigan scored well at 80% for its voter safeguards. The Supreme Court agreed Thursday to consider the government's challenge of a bankruptcy settlement involving Purdue Pharma. That put on pause a deal that would have shielded members of the wealthy Sackler family from civil opioid lawsuits in exchange for payments of up to $6 billion to thousands of plaintiffs. That from the New York Times. The court order, which was unsigned, gave no reasons and included no public dissent. Meantime, people in Illinois prisons could soon have opportunities to further their education, since federal funding has recently been restored.
When the largest crime bill in U.S. history was passed in 1994, Pell grants to fund prison education programs were removed. Almost 30 years later, government funding for these programs has been restored. Reporter Max Lubers with Chalkbeat Chicago has examined what that means for Illinois and points out that the latest expansion of Pell grants builds on what already happened several years ago.
The Obama administration started the Second Chance Pell experiment kind of back in 2015, which authorized some college programs to be able to use Pell Grant funding in correctional facilities.
Pell Grant eligibility will depend on whether the incarcerated person is in a prison with a federally approved program. The U.S. Department of Education opened up applications last month and will approve higher education institutions on a rolling basis. I'm Terry D. reporting.
This is Public News Service. Now to union issues. While union votes often make headlines, the path to a contract can be a long one. Since the beginning of last year, 7 Starbucks locations in Maryland have voted to unionize.
The most recent location in Ellicott City saw their vote certified in late July. That brings the total nationwide to over 330 Starbucks locations. Despite the organizing activity in Maryland and across the U.S., the New York Times reported last month that no unionized Starbucks locations have reached a collective bargaining agreement with the company. Margaret Poydock with the Economic Policy Institute says current labor law structure does not ensure a quick resolution.
Our labor law currently makes it very hard, one, for workers to form a union, and then they have to face a lot of opposition from their employer when they form a union. If they get to the point where they win their union election, it could take years to get that first contract.
According to Starbucks' negotiation website, there are currently no locations in Maryland with bargaining sessions scheduled. Brett Pivoteau reporting.
West Virginia coal miners and advocates spoke out this week in support of new federal silica dust exposure standards.
Miners inhale fine silica dust when cutting into rock. An attorney, Sam Petzonk, says he's represented miners in their 30s and 40s with advanced black lung disease and progressive massive fibrosis. He says the condition has become more common over the past few decades, largely due to lack of worker protections. He adds that while the new standards are an improvement, there's little oversight or enforcement written into the proposed rule.
Although this rule purports to lower the exposure limit, it does not require coal mine operators to conduct routine sampling, and it does not set forth any monetary penalty for violating the dust limit. It also does not require miners to be removed from dusty areas.
Nadia Romlagan reporting.
Finally, Mike Mullen lets us know Indigenous college students face many obstacles in higher education, including overwhelming cost and not feeling culturally connected to their campus.
The University of Wisconsin-Madison Star Lab is using a $500,000 foundational grant to create a one-stop shop for Indigenous students to find scholarship programs and other forms of financial relief specifically geared for them. Project co-leader Gresham Collum says the searchable database will hopefully create more awareness that slipped by him when he was a college student.
I'm a first descendant member of the Stockbridge-Munsee-Mohegan tribe, which means I'm not a formally enrolled member. And a lot of these scholarship policies are based on formal enrollment in the federally recognized tribe.
This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service member and listener supported. Hear us on great radio stations on your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.